The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Good to see you for another edition of the Bill Press Pod. Welcome. Democrats have to stop playing defense. We have a good story to tell, and we've got to get out there and start playing offense. Amen to that. A few Democrats have been saying that for years, but nobody's been saying it louder or stronger than Simon Rosenberg, former advisor to President Clinton and President Obama, and founder of the New Democrat Network, or NDN. And Rosenberg was almost alone in calling the 2022 midterms. All that talk about a GOP red wave was bullshit, Rosenberg insisted, and he turned out to be right. Simon Rosenberg recently moved on from NDN to create a whole new Substack called Hopium Chronicles, where he says he's going to focus on what are today's two biggest challenges. How do we prevent climate change from overwhelming the world that we know? And most important of all, can our democracy survive the attacks from all sides today? We caught up with Simon Rosenberg recently to talk about his new venture and his advice for the Democratic Party. Hello, Simon. Good to talk to you again, and welcome to the Bill Press Pod.
It's good to be here, Bill. It's good to see you again.
Thank you so much. So, you know, you've had a great run with the New Democrat Network, and now you're off on a whole new adventure, Hopium Chronicles. Tell us about it. Why did you walk away from the NDN, and then What's the mission of the Hopium Chronicles?
Yeah, you know, I sort of was the warrior against the red wave concept, and the work that I did received a lot of attention. And I got 100 million Twitter views from mid-October to early November. And I spoke to dozens of grassroots groups who were out there fighting for all of us. And frankly, this whole adventure changed me. I mean, I really learned about where the modern Democratic Party is, and really felt motivated by the passion of the grassroots for making sure that freedom and democracy prevailed. And I felt that I had a different role now. And, you know, I had played a role as running a think tank that sort of advised politicians. I didn't really do work directly with voters that much. It wasn't that important in my work. I was more of a wholesaler rather than retailer, Bill. Mm-hmm. But that's changed. And so I needed to have a new vehicle that allowed me to do the work that I wanted to do in a new way. And I think, you know, Democratic politics and the country's politics are changing dramatically. And there's a lot of new things that need to happen and build if we're going to be successful in defeating MAGA in the coming years. And so this is what I'm doing now, and we're off to a great start. And so come check it out at Hopium Chronicles. It's a fun community of proud patriots and information warriors who are trying to make things better for the country.
Just to make sure we get that plug right.
Yeah, the easiest way to do it is type in Simon Rosenberg and Substack into Google, and it'll pop up. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it.
Well, having been in the middle of and on the fringes of the Democratic Party for so long, what's your take on the state of the party today?
Yeah, we met, Bill, when you were a party leader. I think that, look, my basic take right now is that Joe Biden has been a good president. We've made the country better. We've made tremendous progress. And the Democratic Party is very strong. I think that we really got down on ourselves last cycle. We believed right-wing talking points about ourselves. We fought with one another. And I think that we can't ever do that again. We have to learn from what the Republicans want, and what greater MAGA does every day is to pump negative sentiment into our discourse. They want us to feel bad about our country, our democracy, our leaders, the American experiment, you know, each other, our institutions. And we have to get louder and be more intentional about countering this right-wing noxious noise machine with positive sentiment and telling a story. When they talk America down, we got to talk it up. I mean, all these things that we all say, Bill. And so I think that where we are now today in 2023, and DeSantis's sort of rightward lurch in the last few weeks has confirmed this, is that they've ceded a lot of ground to us. We need to go on offense now. We need to be focusing on expanding our coalition, getting to 55%. You know, we need to try to really make this in the, you know, Joe Biden went big legislatively in 21 and 22. We need to go big politically in this election and really try to crush MAGA and to loosen its dark grip over the Republican Party. And so I think we're living in a time where the party is strong. We have lots of money. We're out raising them. You know, our campaigns are out raising them. Our grassroots are more muscular and more powerful than they've ever been. This is a really good time to be a Democrat. And the only thing that the thing I'm most worried about is that we struggle sometimes with having the confidence and faith in ourselves to do the work that's required. And that's part of the reason why I've started this new venture, Hopium Chronicles.
Well, I can't tell you how much I valued and appreciated your words and your example all during the run-up to 2022. You know, it was so frustrating to me. First of all, I did enjoy telling people I told you so, right? But everybody, all of my friends, your friends, were falling into this, you know, bullshit that we were going to get just stampeded, right? And instead, as you point out, they just decided to go MAGA, having lost twice, right, to go MAGA once again. They seem to be set on that stronger than ever.
I think it's fair to say that extremists and extremism have overtaken the Republican Party. I mean, I think the simplest explanation is that there really is this sort of deep extremism and extremists that have now, you know, sort of hijacked one of America's two, you know, historic political parties. And I think it's really critical that we do everything we can to not look away at this, to not minimize it, to not normalize it, right? It is, you know, one of the two political parties in the most powerful country on earth has gone crazy. And, you know, that's why we have an obligation now, not just to win an election, like we've been grinding it out in the last few elections. We've got to figure out how to build a politics that crushes them, that makes them run away from MAGA because it's a failed politics, which it's been, right? Three consecutive elections. They've been disappointed in a row, but it's not been enough to get them to shake it. And I think that for anyone who thought that MAGA was a Trump phenomenon as opposed to something that was a Republican phenomenon, what's happened with DeSantis in the last few weeks has to dispel that. I mean, it wasn't good enough to be a 15-week abortion ban. He had to make it six. It wasn't good enough for him to remove one democratically elected official. He may remove another one. It wasn't good enough for him to beat up on Disney. He's now punishing Hyatt hotels. I mean, it's unbelievable how much that he, I think, misread this election. This election was a huge success for the Democrats. We made incredible gains in the battlegrounds. We gained in Arizona, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania, right? Incredible performance. And he looked at all that and decided, I'm still going to go be ultra MAGA now instead of trying to move to the center and create a contrast with Trump. And I think he blew it. I think DeSantis really blew it. And, you know, I think I don't know what's going to happen on the Republican side, but they've got two dangerous candidates now leading their party. And it's why we've got to, you know, go big and go on offense and make sure we don't give these guys a chance to get back in the game in the election next year.
It is stunning, isn't it, to see Donald Trump accuse DeSantis of being too extreme on the right, right? I mean, just got to say,
you've been around politicians a lot, right? You know, you've been in the game for a long time. DeSantis screwed up, right? He blew it. I mean, I think what we're going to learn is that last fall, they saw the red wave coming, the mythical red wave, and they calibrated too far to the right. And what ended up happening was when the red wave didn't come, their success in Florida gave them this arrogance that, you know, he could prosecute this politics. And he became more MAGA, you know, than he was before. This was a series of choices he made to make the distance between himself and the battlegrounds even greater. And it's really hard as a political professional to look at this and anything other than say that this guy's just not ready. He's already made unbelievable mistakes. He's like a rookie, can't hit a curveball, whatever the analogy is. Mm-hmm. And he's screwing up. And it's a big deal. It makes it also, I think, more likely that Trump beats him in the primary. And that, you know, where it is today, in my view, where it's more likely that we're going to see Trump as their nominee than it was 2 weeks ago.
Would you prefer, as a Democrat, Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis to run again against in 2024?
I don't know the answer to that, because DeSantis, we don't, you know, what we're learning is we don't really know who he is. I mean, I think if DeSantis was a country club Republican, ran on small government and lower taxes, right, that would worry me. But that's not who he is. And I also always doubted that he had the political skill to be able to beat Trump in the primary and then pull his party back together. I mean, part of what happened in 2022 in the Senate battlegrounds is these heavily MAGA candidates like Oz had a very hard time, once they won the nomination, of pulling the whole party back together, because there was a big chunk of the Never MAGAs that just couldn't go there. And I think that the likelihood now that DeSantis has a very hard time in pulling back the Republican Party, which, by the way, has only averaged 46.5% of the vote in the last four elections. So losing mm-hmm. any of their coalition is dangerous for them. But it's why the work to your, you know, you raised it before when we were talking before the show, the work of Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney and the Bulwark and other, you know, right of center organizations really matter here to create this permission structure for Republicans to reject MAGA. We need them to continue to do that in 2024. And we don't need big numbers here, right? You know, just one percentage point.
Sure.
You know, could make the difference between us winning and losing the election. So this stuff is really meaningful. I do think that Kristol and Liz Cheney and others deserve a lot of credit. You know, there were very vigorous anti-MAGA Republican groups in the election in 2022 in key battleground states. We've got to nurture that as Democrats, let them know that they have a place at our table, and that to try to expand this coalition to get to 55 and really crush them next year.
Just one more word on DeSantis. As you point out, it's been a rough couple of weeks, the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
You know, his book, then he goes on the Tucker Show and says, oh, Ukraine, you know, that's no big deal. It's just a little territorial dispute. Yeah. And yet he's going all out to ban drag shows. I mean, what are they thinking?
Right. I mean, he's coming off as a buffoon. I mean, I don't, there's no real easy way to say it. I mean, he's not a great public performer. It's an important part of the game. I think they got very arrogant. And, you know, what he did on Ukraine, remember that when he was a congressman, he attacked Obama for not being strong enough in defending Ukraine. He was for weapons going to Ukraine in 2015 at a time when Trump was trying to pull them back in his campaign. So DeSantis was one of the leading advocates for arming Ukraine against Russia when he was in Congress. So it makes his abandoning of Ukraine and the Western project to prevent Russia from, you know, weakening the West and weakening the global system that we imagined and built as Democrats, it makes it even more unbelievable what he just did. And I think it makes all of us have to recognize that it shows that he's willing to betray the country for his own political interests in the way that Trump did, and that we can't let this guy anywhere near the White House. We can't trust him to follow the interests of all of us over his own narrow political interests. And he's told us who he is. We've learned a lot about him in the last few weeks, and almost none of it is good.
And it seems that his answer to everything is woke, right? Yeah, like the bank collapse in California. It's because they were too woke, right?
It was embarrassing.
The Defense Department, we have to take them on because they're too woke. I mean, as if anybody knows what the hell he means, as if he knows what he means when he says that word.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, Bill, for those of us who've been around a little bit longer, you know, what woke to me is that it's tax and spend. It's basically this connotation that Democrats are coddling those people too much, right? That's what it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They've been there. That's where their party's been since the 1960s. I mean, exploitation of racial fear has been the central domestic offering of the Republican Party since the mid-1960s. And so this is just a long line of iterations of this exploitation of racial fear, in my view, is what this is code for. And the problem for the Republican Party is that it may have worked for Nixon in '68 when 89% of the country was white, but 65% of the country is white now, and that politics as a force is drying up. It's not that it doesn't have potency. It's just that it isn't what it used to be, and they're still playing the same note to a lot of people that don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was you or someone I saw said that woke is really the new dog whistle, right? I mean, that's exactly what it is. So you talked a little bit about Donald Trump. I agree with you. It looks like he's going to be the nominee of the party again. We'll see what happens. We've got a lot of time. But is he as strong as he was with the base, or is that fading a little bit? How do you read it?
He's obviously not as strong as he was, right? I mean, the fact that DeSantis is even within striking distance, I think DeSantis is behind. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, you know, I think part of what happened with DeSantis in Ukraine is there's some evidence that Trump has kind of surged in the last few weeks. And I think DeSantis panicked. And I think Fox News, as you know, and Tucker, they're all in against Trump, right? So I think Tucker was trying to create space for DeSantis to make up some ground, some lost ground here. And so, you know, in his own mind, right? In his own crazy mind, right? But I think Trump is a wounded creature. I think he's also going to get indicted repeatedly, potentially over the next year, potentially soon, right? And I don't think that's going to help him with with voters outside of his core base. I think it's going to weaken him with the general electorate. And I think that one of the things you saw this week, to me, one of the most fascinating things that happened this week was the number of Republican senators just openly trashing DeSantis for his position on Ukraine. It was a little shocking to me. And I think in part what they were really expressing is, how the hell did we end up in a place where we've got two crazy people basically representing us with no way out? And here they are a year and a half before the next election, and they're starting to become dismayed about what has happened to their party. They should be dismayed. They should be embarrassed. They should be apologetic. They should be working with Democrats to make sure that these guys never get elected. I think we could see a real crack in the Republican coalition, even greater than we had before, because of the perception that there is no possibility that until MAGA is defeated, that the Republican Party can be a constructive force again.
What was your take? Were you surprised to hear, I wasn't there, I don't know whether you were or not, at the Gridiron Dinner, to hear Mike Pence actually take on Donald Trump? He's the only potential or real candidate for 2024 who's been willing to go there so far.
I was there and I was sitting very close to him actually when that happened. I will tell you, in the room, it was a shocking moment. People were really talking about it. It was, you know, in part because what he did, you know, the Gridiron speeches, they're all the jokes, right? Serial jokes for 8 to 10 minutes. And they're very funny. Actually, everybody was very funny. It was a good night. And then everyone does this. They pivot to some serious stuff that they need to say, right?
Like, we love, you know, the media. Pence, we really love you.
right. No, yeah, right. No, they all did that. We love the free press, right? Yeah. But, you know, he went in and dug into Trump in a very profound way. And I think part of my view in this is that what's happening in the Pence world is he wants to run. He's got to figure out how to run against, what to do about Trump. How does he talk about Trump? How does he create differentiation? He knows Trump's going to come after him for being a traitor. So he needed to have some way of fighting Trump where he wasn't looking like he was, you know, a little kid getting pushed around. And I think they made a decision that they're just going to have to go after Trump as being dangerous for our democracy and reckless and everything else, which they should, but he's going to do it. And that was what the signal was. The signal that he gave to the press corps and to the country was that he's not going to hold back on these issues. And he's going to narrow it and tailor it down to the fact that Trump is dangerous for our democracy. He acted in a reckless manner. This was dangerous for the country. He put his own life, his own family's life in danger, all this. And he's just going to stay there. And I think it's how he goes after him. He doesn't go after him on abortion or all the other things, right? He goes after him on this. Well, this would be, it doesn't mean that Mike Pence has a chance, but certainly if that's what he does in the debates and that's what he does in his public appearances, it's going to be an enormous contribution to getting us past this dark period in our history.
And we'll certainly distinguish him from people like Nikki Haley, right, or even Tim Scott, who's out there talking about running, who so far haven't challenged Trump at all, right? They have given no reason. At least Mike Pence has shown a difference on one, maybe the most important of all issues, and willing to go there.
Yeah, it was a welcome development. There's no question about it.
So much to talk about. And I want to ask you about Joe Biden, too, and how you think he's done and what his plans are for 2024. But let's take a quick break here, Simon, if you can, just to take care of a couple of our sponsors. And then we'll be right back and pick up on the other side. And today's podcast is brought to you by the Iron Workers Union of North America under the leadership of President Eric Dean. The ironworkers say the sky's the limit, and boy, do they mean it. You look at most of America's iconic structures, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Sears Tower, the Arch in St. Louis, the New World Trade Center, all built by ironworkers. Check out their website, ironworkers.org, to find out more about their great work. We salute the ironworkers of America and thank them for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
The Bill Press Pod here today. Our guest, Simon Rosenberg, you know him as founder of the New Democrat Network and the New Policy Institute. And I hope you have followed him to his new venture in Substack called Hopium Chronicles. Simon, again, welcome back. Let's talk about Joe Biden. 2 years in, 2.5 years almost in. How do you rate his presidency so far and what he should do about 2024?
I think he's been a really good president. I think the country is far better off. I think that Joe Biden, at his age, could have played it safe, and he didn't. He took enormous risks and tried to do big things. There's a lot of courage, frankly, involved in the way that I think he handled his first 2 years. And I'm really proud of him. I think he frankly showed more life and zest and ambition than I think many of us believed he would have at this point right. in his career. I mean, he could have easily mailed it in, you know, or at least just had a decent 4 years and then gone off into the sunset. That's not what he did, right? He took enormous risks. He barely had a majority, an extraordinary, you know, he did 10 years of legislating in 2 years. And so, you know, he's been a really good president in my view. In terms of the election, I think if he runs, I think he is the front runner to win. I think, you know, that I'd rather be us than them in every way. They've had 3 consecutive elections and where they've struggled in the battlegrounds. I think now that they've sort of made it clear to all these voters that voted against MAGA 3 times that they're going to double down on MAGA in this next election, that it's going to give us the ability to be on offense, as I've been saying, in the battlegrounds. And so I think Biden's got a, you know, is the likely, you know, is likely to get reelected at this point. I mean, the 2 things that are going to drive that are, you know, how's the economy doing and what happens with the war in Ukraine? And if the economy is doing well by the summer of next year and it looks like Putin's been wounded, he's going to get reelected because there just won't be a powerful case against him, in my view. But if he chooses not to run, I mean, that's the other thing, is he may choose not to run. We don't know. You know, I think we would have a very vigorous primary, and I think it would be a delightful and wonderful primary for us because we have so many incredibly competent and capable Democrats. And I think that either way we win. And but I feel good about where Biden is right now.
And if you look at what he has accomplished, as you say, with very slim odds, right, whether it's the economy or inflation, on healthcare, on COVID, on Ukraine, I love your phrase, 10 years of legislation in 2 years. And yet most Americans profess not to have any idea of what he's accomplished. What does that say about the messaging of the Democratic Party or the White House?
Yeah, look, you know, I have this whole rap I do about how we need to get louder and you know, that they're louder than we are. They're not better than we are, but the Republicans are louder than we are. They have information superiority over us, and we have to become far more intentional about closing that gap in the next 2 years. You know, it's through work that you're doing, Bill. It's through other new media organizations that are getting created. But I also think it's about how we have to think of ourselves as Democrats. I think that a lot of the activists that are listening today, people who've written postcards and done texting and given money or knocked on doors, you know, your work is around elections. But there's, you know, three quarters of the cycle happens when there's no election, right? It's now, between now and next summer. And we have to start doing all that amazing work we've been doing in the elections, where our candidates have more money and we can control the information environment and push the early vote through the roof, all the things that we did last cycle. But we also have to start engaging in the daily information war in a far more intentional way. You know, I worked in the war room 30 years ago, and I always say that, you know, when we think of the war room, we think of like 20 sweaty kids drinking Red Bulls, producing, you know, videos. We have to think of the war room now as 2-4 million patriots who are, you know, taking information, spreading good news about our work and Joe Biden, and reaching tens of millions of people every day and participating in the information war. We need to rethink our understanding of ourselves as people who can be loud and can share information. I always say we can be loud without being obnoxious, right? As we all know with our friends, right? You don't want to overshare your community. But imagine if there were 3-4 million people wired together, amplifying positive messages from the Democrats every day. It would be a big step towards countering the right-wing information superiority. But this has to become something that we're talking about, that we're more intentional about, and that we are closing the gap, because it's too big a gap for us to be comfortable with as we head into 2024.
I was at a little event with Senator John Tester the other evening, running for re-election, of course, from Montana. Great guy. And he was talking about this fact when it comes to rural areas, particularly, you know, small farmers like John Tester is, that most people believe, you know, Democrats haven't been helpful to agriculture. And he said, and it's just the opposite, right? That Biden's policies, Obama's policies were very, very good for small farmers across the country. But even in those areas, nobody knows it.
Look, we need to pull the curtain back from the wizard, right? I mean, it's happening with Fox News now. I mean, Fox is still going to pretend that they're a news organization. We don't have to pretend with them any longer. I mean, we don't have to go along, you know, with the story, this false story that they're a news organization. They're a Republican organization pretending to be a news organization. It's even worse than not being a news organization, because they're continuing to pretend every day and lie to the American people. And I think that there is this part of our discourse with the American people about how intentional the Republicans have been about lying to them about basically everything, and that it's their fundamental strategy, that they don't really have a governing strategy. They have a lying and disinformation strategy. And I know that sounds wild, right? But it's true. And, you know, what they have is they don't have good candidates. They don't have good ideas. They don't have good campaigns. What they have is this right-wing noise machine, largely funded by Rupert Murdoch and allies. And now Elon Musk, unfortunately, right, is seeming to align himself with this world. And we have to understand that the Republican Party now essentially is Rupert Murdoch, I mean, it's Sean Hannity. It's, you know, it's not, you know, Ronna Romney McDaniel. She's not head of the Republican Party. I mean, Tucker Carlson's far more powerful than she is. And so, you know, we have to stop pretending like this is a normal time in the country, right? The Republicans have gone crazy. They're using extraordinary means to advance their politics. And we can't be nostalgic for an old day when everybody's going to get along again. We have to learn. Part of what I'm doing is I felt this urgency in these next 2 years to make a contribution beyond what I've been doing. And I've reorganized my work life and my work to allow me to make a bigger contribution. And I think, you know, part of that is using new media. We have to invent and innovate in the media space. And so I'm using one of the pieces of it. It's not the only one, Substack, which I think is a powerful new platform that I'm really pleased with. That is going to be where I'm going to be doing most of my work. I'm still going to be on Twitter, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, and I'm going to be on podcasts and other things. I'm really impressed with Substack, and I think it's going to be part of a series of things that we need to do to get louder, become more effective, to be information warriors, to contest the information space in a far more aggressive manner in the coming
years. We have to take advantage of every one of those opportunities and openings. So we've talked about 2024 in terms of where Trump is, where DeSantis is, where Biden is. There's another possible player out there, as you know, Simon. You've written about it. I've written about it. Called No Labels, who say, well, the answer is both parties are too extreme. We need a third party with a centrist candidate right down the middle, and we're going to put them on the ballot in all 50 states.
Your take? Yeah, it's just unbelievably silly. I mean, I just, on the face of it, it's just it's like laugh out loud ridiculous. And that the idea that there's some equivalency between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, it's a disqualifier. I mean, once you make that argument, then nothing else you say really matters any longer because it's just pure fiction. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I just don't think it's going to, you know, I think it's going to be very inconsequential. And I don't believe, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. But it depends on who the candidates are, how old they are, and how they present themselves. Could it shave off enough votes in a handful of states to cause us to lose? It's possible. It's also possible they don't raise any money and that it's not a real thing and that they quit. I mean, I just don't believe that if it's Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and they're polling at 5% and they know that all they're doing is to make sure Joe Biden loses, why would they go through with it? And I just, there's just no logic to that at that point, right? Because they have no chance of winning. I mean, one of the reasons that I know that Kyrsten Sinema is going to run in Arizona is that she's at like 15% because there is no actual middle lane in the country. Right. I mean, the truth is, you know, 46, 47% of the country is Democrat, 41, 42% is Republican, about 10, 12% is so-called independent. Large chunks of those are actually to the left of the Democratic Party and to the right of the Republican Party. I mean, this idea that a third of the country is independent is just complete bullshit. I mean, we know this from in politics, about 10% of the country is independent. And you know what really defines independence when you look at them and study them is they think, you know, they are disconnected from politics. They think politics is corrupt, bad. So they actually don't like it. And so the idea that they're then going to turn out in large numbers and be motivated, it's highly unlikely. All of this is ridiculous. And I hope that, you know, Nancy Jacobson and Mark Penn, who are the two people behind this, who, Bill, you and I both know very, very well olden days, right?
right.
You know, they're being reckless and irresponsible. Now, this is a self-indulgent, ridiculous escapade. And my hope is that everyone just ignores it, because the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference, and we should be deeply indifferent to this.
Absolutely. So you kind of made this point earlier. I just want to close by maybe having you repeat yourself, which is we're heading into 2024. Simon Rosenberg, would you rather be us or them at this point?
Thanks for that setup, Bill. You've been doing this a while, Bill. I can tell. Yeah, I'd rather be us than them. I mean, I think that we, you know, Joe Biden's been a good president. The country is better off. The Republicans have struggled in the battlegrounds. They're presenting themselves as MAGA again, despite, you know, what a rational political party would do, which is run away from a failed politics. If we can make sure that, if we have to stay focused on a couple of things, we've got to make sure the economy stays strong, that we finish the job in Ukraine, And I think politically in 2023, the most important things we could do are, one, is launch a national voter registration drive for young people. You know, the people who are most Democratic vote the least. We got to change that. And second of all, we all have to, as information warriors, help Joe Biden win the big economic argument with the Republicans. We are down on the economy in polling. If we're up on the economy by the end of the year, you know, we're going to be in very strong shape heading into 2024. So I feel good. I feel, you know, I know from having been working in the grassroots that, you know, the Democratic Party's grassroots is stronger today than it's ever been. And all these incredible people out there, millions and millions of people who are giving up part of their lives to because they love their country and are trying to make things better for all of us. I just want to say thanks to everybody. I've met so many incredible patriots and in the last few months. And part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is that I'm doing it because they inspire me to do the work that needs to get done because they're doing the work. And so we're strong right now, Bill. You and I have been doing this a long time. I think the Democratic Party in some ways is stronger today than it's ever been in our adult lifetime. And so I'm feel good. But you know, we got to do the work, and the stuff that happens this year will really matter for next year. We have a lot of work we need to do this year to put us in a position to defeat MAGA in 2024.
Well, Simon, you've already made a great, great difference for the party and for the country. It's great that your voice is going to continue out there on the Hopium Chronicles. We'll put a link up so people can join you on our on the episode notes to today's podcast. Thanks for all you're doing, and keep up the good fight. I'll be there fighting alongside of you. And thanks for your time today on the Bill Press Pod.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks, everybody.
And that's a wrap for today's podcast with Simon Rosenberg. So check out Hopium Chronicles, a new Substack. Just Google it, Simon Rosenberg. You'll see the link to Hopium Chronicles. Sign up and keep up with all the latest that Simon Rosenberg is talking about on the issues and on Democratic Party politics particularly. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget, come back on Friday. We know you'll love the roundtable, as do I. The roundtable this week, looking at all the news from Washington, Congress, and the White House, and all the federal agencies that happened this week. We'll wrap it all up on Friday. Have a good week in the meantime. We'll see you Friday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod and our reporters roundtable.